podcast, what's good? Really fun announcement before you listen to the show today. November 17th at 12 p.m. Eastern, 9 for you West Coasters, 5, 6, 7 for Europe, stand up. 12 Eastern, November 17th, inside of VFriends Discord on the stage we have in there, the live chat stage, I will be having a very big surprise announcement and a fun announcement with my co-founders of Empathy Wines, Nate and John, you know, who now are corporate animals and work at Constellation after we sold the company. So we're not necessarily friends anymore, but I love them. And they'll be joining me and we will be having a surprise announcement. If you are not part of the VFriends Discord, A, that's a huge mistake, because it's not just talking about VFriends, it's mainly actually talking about the education of NFTs. But the URL is often in my personal Instagram account and connected, but sometimes I change it. And the other thing you can do is go to @VFriends on Instagram. It's linked there. You should follow @VFriends too. A lot going on in that world. November 17th, noon Eastern, inside the Discord on the audio stage, me and my two partners, John and Nate, talking about a super fun surprise.
This is the Gary V Audio Experience.
Hey everybody, welcome to an episode of the Gary V Audio Experience. I'm really excited because I haven't done a podcast with another human being next to me in what feels to be like 2 years. So I'm incredibly excited for our guest today. If you follow my content at a scary level, because it's maybe been a little while, but I would often be asked during Q&A, call it 5, 6, 7 years ago, four, timing's tough these days, about, well, Gary, you just talked about this, but what brands are doing it right? And at the time, I was incredibly fascinated with a brand that I thought was doing influencer marketing on Instagram as well as anybody I had seen, and I do a lot of watching all the time, then, now, and forever. And so I started kind of just mentioning Gymshark without really knowing whom or what. Again, if you really, really know me, legitimately didn't even Google it or look it up or went to the website, just saw it in the flow and would mention it. Several years later, met some of the key executives were in my office. He's sitting in the background right now. And then a little later, met the gentleman that is with me now, who is the founder of the company. Ben, why don't you introduce yourself to the Vayner Nation and welcome.
Yeah, no, thanks. My name's Ben Francis, founder and now chief exec of Gymshark. Gymshark's a fitness apparel brand. We were started, I guess, during the social era. Everything that we do is all about community.
When did you start the company?
2012. So 2012, I was 19 years old. I was just starting university at the time. And so I, as a kid, I wanted to be a bodybuilder. So I would massively admire a lot of the big bodybuilders over in California. And I wanted to essentially be like those guys, but I was never big enough. I just didn't have the muscle mass. So at that point, bought a sewing machine, screen printer, and started hand-making the clothes myself. Fast forward to today and,
what,
you know.
Play with me a little bit there. You go from, I'm going to be Arnold Schwarzenegger, to I need a sewing machine.
Yeah.
Help me put that together. Like, you knew you wanted to start a t-shirt brand, a fashion brand?
No, it wasn't that. So it was fitness. So I just loved fitness. So as a kid, wasn't amazing at school, wasn't misbehaved or anything, just for whatever reason, I just couldn't get on board with it. It didn't resonate with me.
I understand the concept.
Then I joined the gym at 16, I think it was. And then that taught me structure that school hadn't taught me. It taught me that I go to the gym 5 days a week. And if I'm feeling tired, happy, whatever, I still have to get it in. And then that structure, I then applied it to school life. And then I did well at school and managed to get into university, which was massive.
Okay.
So as a kid, completely fell in love with fitness. And that was my then ambition, was to be involved in fitness. I wasn't actually at that point desperate to be involved in apparel or supplements or equipment or anything like that.
Just a macro, I'm gonna be in the fitness game.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so talk me through, you know, I had a very similar moment in my life. It just happened at a very, 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 very young age. Whereas in third or fourth grade, I remember David Johnson in my class, like, made me miss 7 tackles and he scored like 9 touchdowns in backyard football. And I decided there that I was not going to be a New York Jet football player, but I decided that I was going to buy them instead.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have, when you just went through what you just said, it really clicked for me. I smiled. So you love the discipline. It makes all the sense. You're mm-hmm. totally infatuated. Are you at 17 and 18 trying to figure out if you have the muscle mass to go into that world? You kind of always knew?
To be honest, I just knew, because I think there was other people my age that were just so much far ahead.
Yeah.
So I knew at that point that I wasn't going to be able to do that. Now, when I said the gym got me sort of doing well at school, it was at that point that then I started studying IT and I learned how to develop websites and apps.
Okay.
So at that point, all the websites and apps that I was making, it would always be around fitness. It would be either a little fitness forum or it would be a fitness iPhone app.
Mm-hmm.
And I ended up making, I think it was about 6 different apps and websites all centered around fitness before Gymshark.
Okay.
Basically none of those transacted. None of them sold product. And to be honest, it was more of a almost challenge to myself. Oh, how cool would it be to create something that would transact? So I thought supplements, because naturally supplements,
course,
I think, is the first place people go. Yeah,
and at this point, are you pretty astute to Instagram? Are you posting there? Are you watching it? Are you living?
Yeah, so Instagram wasn't as big a thing back then. So mm-hmm. this was like 2011, 2012. It was right. more, everything was on Facebook. Facebook
right.
pages was like the thing. YouTube
yes.
was obviously huge.
Yes.
So I went to, there was a mate of mine that actually worked at a supplement shop,
mm-hmm.
and I said to him, right, at the time I was working as a delivery driver at Pizza Hut, and I was earning about, I think it was like £4 or £5 an hour, and I went to him and I said, can I buy some supplements off you, because I'm making this website and I want to sell supplements online. And he basically said, yeah, I'll do you a deal, and the minimum order was £8,000 worth of supplements. Now, I'd never heard of £8,000, let alone seen it, right? So that was like completely off the cards. So at that point, I thought, right, what I'll do is I'll drop ship supplements. So loaded up the website with hundreds and hundreds of different supplements.
If somebody buys something, I'll deliver it.
Yeah, exactly that. And basically, you would make, I mean, our first order, it took a few months to get. First order was £50, and I think £1 or £2 was profit. But I'd achieved my, albeit very low, goal of transacting in fitness online. Did that for a little bit and slowly realized that the margin just wasn't in dropshipping. It wasn't like a long-term model. And that's when I was looking at people like Arnold Schwarzenegger, Ronnie Coleman, looking at what they were wearing. And I was actually buying product from the States. And I'll never forget, I was buying like these stringer tanks and they would come in and they would just drown me. It looks like I was wearing like my dad's top as a kid, right? Completely drown me. So I thought, right, let's try and make our own. And it was at that point, sewing machine, screen printer, and started to hand make the product ourselves.
And when you say we...
So that was me and Lewis, who's I co-founded the business with. Later on, help from my brother as well, and then some of our friends. And then we sort of just started to hand make these products. And even though we put it on the website, we were almost just making it for one another because we were all in the gym every single day. And over time, basically, so as kids, especially in late teens, didn't watch loads of telly or didn't watch much TV. It was all YouTube. And all of my heroes were on YouTube. And because at the time YouTube was this new and upcoming thing, I basically would send out the product to some of my favorite YouTubers. And again, because YouTube just wasn't a massive thing, they would look at the product and they would talk. And I ended up making friends with these guys over in California, in Germany, in the UK, who would then give us feedback on the product. And like I said, just became friends. We then sold more of this product online and we did better and better and better. And going back to my sort of love for fitness, I'm really fortunate because in the area that I'm from, which is in Birmingham in the UK, one of the best fitness events in the world, they always had it. It was an event called Body Power. And as a kid, I would always go. Every single year, we'd always go. It'd be like a pilgrimage for us. And then in the period where Gymshark was first starting, I had like a massive gut feel to be at this event. I thought, I don't know how, but Gymshark needs to be at this event because this was the dream, right? Went to the guy that runs the show. I think it was about £3,000 at the time for an event, but we made revenue at that point. So I thought we had 12 months to pay for the £3,000. I'd be able to find it in a year. So basically put down the order. We said we'd take a stand and over the next 12 months just handmade the product and save the money for the event. As the event was coming round, it was in May, by sort of start of the following year, so a few months before the event, we had enough money to fly over these YouTubers and influencers to the event, build a good stand, take product to the event. And basically the brand just blew up at this event. No one else was doing it. We were a completely open shop in a world that was very much like selling products, selling products, selling product. We were like, come in here, talk to us, meet the guys, the athletes. If you want to buy a product, you can.
If not.
And if you're not, don't worry. And by the way, after the event, we'd all go down and lift together. Whether you were a general fitness person that wanted to buy the product, an athlete, one of the small number of staff members. And what we inadvertently did was started to build a community just at the grassroots level by going and lifting with people after this event. And then prior to that event, we were selling about £200 or £300 a day worth of product. So what's that, $400 or $500 a day. Then after the event, through the event, all of these lifts that we were doing were posted on Facebook, which Facebook and YouTube, which is where everyone was at the time. And the brand started to go viral because I'd actually turned. I couldn't both have the website on and be at the event because all the product was made. So I turned the website off for that weekend, came back after the weekend, having gone viral on Facebook and YouTube. And in the first half an hour after the website went live, we did £30,000 worth of revenue from £200 or £300 a day. That was in 2012, 2013. That's when it really started to move.
So it makes sense that when Instagram, because Instagram was happening, but like at the beginning.
So Instagram was coming up then. And here, I don't know what it was like where you were. It was very much like the sort of, I don't know what you call them, like indie kids. It was almost 100%. Like super, super filtered. And it was like everyone had sepia everywhere.
Yeah. Very, very hipster, Brooklyn, San Francisco.
Yeah.
That was the first year of it for sure.
And then we just thought, you know what, it seems cool. We started using it. I was more on Facebook at the time. Then we moved on to Instagram and we just started posting on Instagram. And
was the company always called Gymshark?
Yes. So the company was always called Gymshark, but we basically changed our logo through the years.
Makes sense.
So I say, as a kid, I wanted to be a bodybuilder. That was the ambition. So at the start, it was to build bodybuilding clothing. So the logo was like a muscular cartoon shark.
Yes, I remember it actually.
And it wasn't long after that first event
that
we realized that the bodybuilding market, as much as I loved it, we wanted to grow beyond that, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So the brief sort of to myself was, I want a logo that appeals as much to that bodybuilding market, but as everyone else. And the brief was, it has to appeal to my mom as well as me. So that's when we built this sort of shark head logo that we use today. And then we sort of started to venture out more into fitness.
What was kind of, so obviously that huge event first, what was the next big quote unquote moment you think in building this business? Because let me jump in here and make this not just about Ben and Gymshark and make it for all the listeners. What you just heard is the same old thing. I mean, I'm gonna go to the grave. People laugh when I say the word arbitrage now in my real life, but I can't help it. It's just what it is. Every second in the world, whether you're running for mayor, trying to get money for your PTA, sell sneakers, change people's opinions on something, change the way people dress, a new haircut style, get people to drink cleaner, stop supporting something, support something. No matter what you are trying to accomplish, persuade your kids to do something. No matter what you are trying to do in the world, the game of content and distribution is how the world works.
Mm.
The game, right now, this is content and distribution. There are a lot of people listening, but the variable is what's gonna come out of Ben's mouth. For everybody's listening right now, their perception of you and the brand from a filter of this community will be completely predicated on what happens here in the next 15, 20, 30 minutes. Now, whether that's 10 seconds on TikTok or the first 2 seconds of a pre-roll YouTube ad that's even 2 minutes long, or a piece of direct mail, a billboard, walking through an airport and looking at a sign, it's all just the same game. At every moment, 80% of the world is overpriced for the attempt to convince somebody of something. The telly, outdoor billboards are up 15% around the world over the last decade, in a world where in that decade, every passenger no longer looks outside. Bad deal. Right, you know, a lot of people know where I feel about this, whether it's NFT or TikTok or Discord right now, good deal. And this just ebbs and flows. And I think what it's fun for me to hear this story because I don't know this story. It makes so much sense because what you did, in my opinion, because I pick up watching it in the wild somewhere around this point as the next year, is the rep of Facebook and YouTube made you more prepared to be even better at it at Instagram. And even the story, because you brought some people to that event, you were able to see that the personality arbitrage, those athletes, whoever you brought to that booth, that was a massive arbitrage, both in people at the event wanting to come and see them, mm-hmm. but then also the content they were putting out into the world that led to this $30,000 day. That's, I always say there's this thing where when something special is happening, once you see it, you can't unsee it.
Yeah.
You didn't need to watch my content, read a business book, or go to a seminar to realize there's a thing going on here. Let me go committed. You're a kid at that point. Mm-hmm. And for everybody who's listening, that's what you're looking for. You're looking for the underpriced moment in time. So many of you that are listening right now, it was funny, I just took a flight here to the UK and I was reading a bunch of DMs and I still, in the last 24 hours, I probably had 7 or 8 people just flat out DM thanking me for pushing them so hard 2 years ago on TikTok, and that was the moment for them after 7 or 8 years of getting no traction, 7 or 8 years of getting no traction on Instagram and YouTube. And this will continue to forever happen. And so again, I wanted to take this lesson break from this interview. It's always gonna be this. Procter & Gamble is the biggest consumer packaged goods brand in the world because they were the most aggressive on television commercials in the 1950s. Period, end of story. Amazon is the biggest company in the goddamn world, or at least one of them in the world, because it was the most aggressive buyer of Google AdWords in the early 2000s. There's always an arbitrage. Tell me mm-hmm. just a little color on your next arbitrage, whether it was scaled Instagram or something else.
Yeah, so next steps. And it sounds really weird, by the way, the things that I'm talking about, given the fact that we are, everything we do is online and it's all on social. But we did that event really well. And to your point, we noticed that. So then we spent all of our money, we agreed to do the event again next year. And then we flew to Cologne, Germany and did an event over there. So there was a big event called FIBO, which was twice the size of the event here. We did that. The following year, we did Arnold, Ohio. We went to California, Australia, Germany, UK. So the events thing just got bigger and bigger and bigger. And exactly the same as that first event, we were there. We had the team. We had the athletes. We had the community. We would lift in the gym after. We would all and build that community. And interestingly enough, fast forward 8 or 9 years now, surprise, surprise, where are our key markets and our key areas where those communities were built? The UK, Germany, Australia, California, places like this. So we built up these communities. Now, as we go doing all these things, Instagram is built in. People are following us on Instagram, on YouTube, on Facebook. They're following the whole athlete team. So one, we're building up this community. But two, we're starting to work out exactly how our business works. And I had a lot of big, big learning curves in terms of how to run a business, right? Sure. How to build teams. And I had to completely reinvent myself several times. So in the early days, rocking up to an event and basically saying, I think we need to do this event because my gut tells me to, it's fine. And that really works because you can move the business in a really quick way. But then all of a sudden, you're building teams. And it can't just be what Ben says, because that's not particularly scalable. I had to then learn to, one, build teams, work with people, and then start to articulate reasons as to why. Then it gets even bigger, and I have to then learn to articulate a vision, speak, like publicly, on camera, understand better operations, finance, logistics, tech solutions, how to build a foundation of the business, which at the time I had no idea, right? I was purely brand and product focused, because those are my true passions. So I had to learn to, well, one, learn to grow, two, reinvent myself, and three, learn to love areas of the business which I probably didn't naturally lean into as much as.
As an entrepreneur, do you think that you need to learn to love those areas, or do you think you need to find people who love those areas and learn enough to be dangerous to be able to manage those people?
Yeah, probably more the latter. Mm-hmm. More the latter, especially now. At the start, when you haven't got the resource, you have to sort of wear all the hats. So I think you have to, for me, I had to really get sort of passionate about them. Now, we're a much larger business, you're right. You find the best people in the world that you possibly can afford, and you get them in that seat.
It's really weird. As I was listening to you, I've been having a very interesting 3 weeks at VaynerX where I feel that I've been too complacent for the last 5 years in being too executive life, and I'm patient and empathetic and I don't micromanage, but I've been signaling to my leadership team, look, I'm too right about where the market's going and I'm too passive in pushing you there because it's uncomfortable for you because you can't see it the way I can see it. And so I'm gonna start being a little bit more aggressive in 2022 and 2023 to do what I know is going to be right. Yeah. And it was funny because as you were talking, I'm like, huh, what an interesting arc for a chief executive who founded a company. In the beginning, like, I've never historically been concerned about this concept of it's not scalable because it's you, because I also know that at Amazon or Apple or Tesla or Procter & Gamble, it's shocking how few people actually run the company. Mm-hmm. The great secret of the world of business is the biggest businesses in the world are really run by 7, 12, 15 people. Mm-hmm. I'm talking companies with 150,000, 200,000. That's just the punchline of the reality of it. But it's so interesting. I would be so in everything. Then you go through that arc. You create scale. But what happens is you build a company that potentially can be not as sharp.
Yeah. Well, I had to change a lot, right? So, and I was an avid watcher of your content, particularly in the early days. And you would talk about leaning on your strengths, focus on your strengths. So what I did in the early days was purely, I had this moment, right, where it was focus on my strengths or work on my weaknesses. And I sort of try and zoom out of what Ben wants and think about what Gymshark needs. And Gymshark needed Ben to be incredible at his strengths. So it was at that point we brought in a chief exec. So someone else called Steve, who's run the company brilliantly up until a few months ago when I came back into the CEO role. He could then look after, to a degree, running the business. And I would go brand, product, marketing. And obviously I would have founder duties, director duties. But on a day-to-day basis, that was all I focused on. And I got really, really, really good at those things. And that was really powerful for me because having Steve there to look after the other bits meant I could fail in those areas without consequence. So the way I would sort of describe it is I could jump into the finance department, mess around and learn, almost like mess around and break things, knowing that it would always be looked after by our CFO and Steve. And that's the way that I learn, by actually physically doing.
I'm the same exact way.
And like being in there and actually being able to do it myself. I mean, there was periods in product, I'll never forget this, where we needed to build a particular range. So we all just jump on a plane, fly out to the factory for a week and just make the range and then come back when it's done. So now in the chief exec role, the context that gives me, I understand the product process. I understand the brand process. I've been to every single event. I understand the marketing process. And because I've been able to spend time in ops, go to distribution centers, live and breathe it, I understand the foundations of the business as well. And the reason that I can do that at 29 is because Steve in the chief exec role allowed me to essentially fail freely.
I grew up in an environment where I did every single thing in my dad's store, so it was so easy for me at 22 to run it. And I remember when I started getting into corporate world, I was impressed. You know, as an entrepreneur, you have a lot of cynicism towards big companies because they're slow and they do things great and they do things poorly. But as you were talking, I'm like, you know, that's one thing that I do think the Fortune 500 world does do well. If you look at who ascends into a CEO role, they make her or him bounce around in all the categories so they can taste it. It was fun, like when I was, like, again, similar to not like Googling your company and seeing who you were, I don't tend to look up stuff, I just live it. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, they moved Christian to product. He used to be in marketing. Wait, Christian's the CEO now? Oh, that makes sense. She did all these things. So before we get out of here, what I was really excited about having you on with is that you're of the age and have had the decade that a lot of the audience that's listening is embarking on and definitely aspires to. I think you've been really strong in articulating certain parts of that journey right now. I have to assume, given how popular Gymshark is with so much of the youth and where it was built, to your point, a brand that's truly built in, you know, I'm running around Madison Avenue saying brand is built in social because they all believe it's built in telly. And your company is a true testament to that. What are your go-to pieces of advice for the kids that are like, I want to be like you? Because I'm assuming you get a shitload of that.
Yeah, to be honest, I think it's probably fairly similar to what you talk about. I think self-awareness is key. So that if I wasn't self-aware as to my strengths and weaknesses and couldn't approach them in a logical way, then I think we wouldn't be where we are today. I think it's important for entrepreneurs and CEOs to separate themselves from the business because it is a separate entity, albeit so intrinsically linked. Like Gymshark is my baby, but I have to think about things from a Gymshark point of view. And something that I think a point we've done well, but I think we could do better at is it's very rare for something to work for a prolonged period of time. So I think we were talking before, right, about you with email. Email worked, but then there's a point where very quickly, and it almost comes out of nowhere that it doesn't. And then, sorry, that's not to say that email doesn't work, because I think there's huge value in it today.
It's not the same level of arbitrage.
Just, things change quickly.
In such a big way. And by the way, in your business, product and marketing, at the core, both change a lot.
Yeah.
Right? Like it was so funny. D-Rock, are you still wearing, let me see your pants real quick, or you changed them? On the flight, you had, and many people are wearing, the bottoms, right? And I was, literally, as we were boarding the plane to London, I was a little ahead of you on the ramp, and you were walking. Did you see me look?
Yeah, then you're looking at the sneakers.
I wasn't looking at the sneakers, which would have made sense. I was looking at the fact that over the last 18 months, that level of band on pants is what people rock with. And what I was thinking, D-Rock, was, holy shit, 20 years ago, my number one goal when I bought jeans was how wide could the bottom be, because I had to cover as much of my shoe as possible because that's what was in style, right? Mm-hmm. And now I'm looking around, all the dudes are like, everything is like super tight, right? And like that's a, you know, for me, that wake up call, the only time that I felt like, I would almost compare it to a fighter. The only time I was rocked in the ring, like, oh shit, I might get knocked, was absolutely that 2002-2003 thing where I was like, how did I, this tenacious, young, ambitious dude, fall into this lull where I became completely one-dimensionally vulnerable to just what I do on email, and I could feel myself milking it and squeezing it, and it felt really uncomfortable. And that's probably why I was so quick to move to MySpace Friendster curiosity, because I'm like, okay, that's maybe something I can do. And then boom, YouTube, Twitter come, and the rest. And then, and it shook me to the point where I think I'm very aggressive on looking for the next TikTok. Real quick, before I lose you, because my brain just went there, because the next thing I'm looking at is Discord. You said, and I want everybody to hear this, you can rewind it. You said the word community an enormous amount of times. And I do think what is going on right now, and everybody in this kind of general sense of our universe is aware of what's going on with like the Reddit Robin Hood stuff on buying stocks. I think the Discord thing really has my attention. I really do believe that the Facebook group Discord thing is very real. Facebook group for that 45 to 90 year old, Discord for that 18 to 44 year old, for every brand. I'm drinking a Joe and the Juice, another good European based brand that's going global. I do predict that, and which I hate to do because it hasn't really happened yet, so I'm vulnerable here, but I think most brands are gonna have Discords and have them in a real way, because I do think community is been subtly hidden in the comment sections of social, and I think Discord with NFT land is very clearly showing people it's always been that. And what's interesting is, to tie it all into a knot, because it's how I lived with Wine Library TV, I did a lot of real life events there too, and have always naturally gravitated towards them as well, because they're just community anchors.
But I think, and then on that note as well, you're right, there's so much to lean into online, and you see so much about people saying like, offline is dead, the high street is dead. And when you hear that, I think your ears will prick up, right, and go, if that's what's being said, there's an opportunity there. And there are people that do it incredibly well. So like community comes in all different shapes and sizes.
I think to your point, and I love that, where my brain went is exactly what retail is gonna turn into in the next 30 years is community hubs, right? The store is gonna become so different than what your mom grew up with, what I grew up with. Like, you're gonna be required to make that a place where somebody actually wants to go. That no different than your pop-up at these events. That happened to maybe also want to buy something.
Because a lot of stores and a lot of retail has been, and I split many companies into two different categories, right? You've always got brand and utility. And you wouldn't go to a store now purely for a utility point of view, because you can shop Amazon and it can be at your door in 2 hours. So why would you go to a store? So brand, as a brand, you have to look after your community. And I think offline will be a place where people, to your point, can go to be in a community hub.
As we wrap up here, I want to make a fun announcement to my community. I am more protective of my time than ever. Very secretly, I just want to cancel everything and just only focus on VFriends, because I should. And probably my best, quickest path to New York Jets. However, Ben and I did eventually meet during COVID and things of that nature, and I'm happy to announce, I wanted to save him being on the podcast for this moment, that I'm joining the board of Gymshark, which I'm incredibly excited about. I don't need you to talk about why. Mm-hmm. I think I want you to talk to people on how we bring them value. How do you think, whether it was with me or just in general, how do you think when you have your baby, mm-hmm. when it's your company, you're now stepping into back into kind of a CEO role, even though I know what a founder CEO, that, there was a lot of COO, CEO going on mm-hmm. in that relationship with Steve, but how do you think about board members for the people here who are looking for, maybe not everyone's at the scale that they need a yeah. board member, but I do think a lot of people ask me, can I be their mentor? And I'm always sad because I have no shot of that. I don't have the time. Mm-hmm. But how does somebody who's listening right now, if they're a youngster, even if they're 62 and they could be a youngster in business because it might be their first entrepreneurial venture, they've had a 40-year professional career. What's your advice as you're starting to court people like myself to the board? How do you think about bringing in a mentor or a board member? How do you think about that?
Well, yeah, I think it depends on the size of the business, right? Because I never thought we would need a board. Like, right. I didn't really know what a board did, really, until, right. what, like 6 months ago. I remember saying to you, I'm not totally sure how a board will work, but let's try and work it out.
I remember.
To be honest, though, my approach has been, just always try and surround yourself with the best people possible. When I was a kid and I was at the gym, I would do that. I would always say I would go and peck people's heads at the gym. Like, you just go and ask questions all the time, whoever it is. And that's where I learned so much.
Can I sneak this in real quick for fun? What is the biggest miss for the normal person around the gym? What is the, if I asked you one or two, what's the biggest easy, if you want to gain a little muscle mass or do it right, what do you see as the common, the people that don't go as hardcore as you, the D-Rocks of the world, right? Yeah. For example, who wants to stay in shape because he probably is a little vain, but is not like really consuming an enormous amount of content to be like, but would want to like maybe put on some, what is the biggest mistakes?
One word, if you could fix everything, it'd be consistency. Because like if I see so many people go 7 days a week for 6 weeks and then never again for a year, and then they do it again. Whereas you'd sooner go twice a week for a year, right? Than just like nonstop for a small period.
Mine is where you were going. Food. COVID, because I wasn't traveling as much, Mike Vacanti, my trainer, and I, who's been with me for a long time, I had Mike for 3 years, then Jordan for 2 years, and now Mike for 3 years. I've had 8 years now of like consistent training. I've put on more muscle during COVID than I did the entire time because I had a very weird thing. Mm. I was too hot and cold. If I worked out in the morning, I would eat very tight during the day. Because I put in the work and I was like, fuck that shit. Because it was so scale, not muscle.
Yeah.
If I didn't work out, and that was very rare for the first 5 or 6 years, but the last 2 or 3 years I've had more missed days because we were just, the amount of travel I did, they were always with me and we just kind of like toned it a hair down. If I didn't work out, I would eat more loose. During COVID, I went the reverse, which is far more the ideal state, which is when I would be rolling or soft tissue or fascia or something a little, or just abs, I would eat incredibly light. When I was doing muscle work, like real lifting, I truly, truly put in the protein against the work and it was significantly different.
Yeah, makes a difference.
So that's what it is, D-Rock. That's why you're struggling. All right, let's wrap this up. What are you most excited about in the Gymshark land, in fitness land, in consumer marketing land, in product land? Let's take this very macro, not necessarily very detailed. Gymshark's about to launch a lollipop, more of the macro of this whole world. What are you seeing?
I think similar to what I said earlier, I think we have to rethink the way that we see so many things. I think I'm seeing a lot of signs similar to what you mentioned around email and a lot of the social platforms that live today. I think to your point, Discord and TikTok and places like that will be the area to get eyes on brands, but also to truly build communities. Going back to what I said earlier, I think offline has always worked. I think just the way that it works has completely changed. And I think that's what we're going to see in the next few years.
What about on the product side? Like back to the joke about the lollipop, is there...
I think, so from an apparel perspective, I think the opportunity for innovation is massive because I think you're going to see materials innovation at a rate that we've not seen before, particularly from a sustainability perspective. Whereas before, it was all around sweat wicking or stretch, whereas now I think it will be about being recycled and recyclable and having the performance properties but in a sustainable way.
Right, it's like after you're done working out, if you soaked your shirt, just throw it outside because it'll just become part of the ground. Maybe not that extreme, but but what about on the footwear side? Last question, on the footwear side, is there innovation opportunity for people working out? I've been seeing a lot of weird stuff right before COVID, like at the gym, like people not wearing shoes at all, different socks, like just been seeing,
I'm wearing barefoots. I think, but they laugh at me for wearing these. I think there's massive opportunity.
I wonder if that's why I asked the question, by the way. I'm like, what is he wearing? What are those? It seriously was subconscious. That's exactly what just happened.
No, I think, listen, same. I think the opportunity is massive. I think there's opportunity in sustainability. I think it's all around building out true performance product, but also sort of innovations in the way that the product's delivered as well.
Brother. Excited to get to know you.
And you.
Much more. Congratulations on everything.
Thank you.
And I hope you have a great day. As we end today's podcast, I want to give a huge shout out to the people. You know, it's so funny. People that leave reviews and written reviews of this podcast on Apple, Spotify, and all the other platforms just mean the world to me. You've taken an extra 13 to 95 seconds to show love and also give context to people of why this is a worthwhile podcast. So I appreciate that so much. And even more fun, because I think we all love a little cosign or a shout out or a little awareness. I'm going to have the team give a couple of shout outs daily on our favorite reviews. So take it away. Which were our favorites this week?
Thanks so much, Gary. Today's amazing 5-star review reads, long info, short listens. Thank you for these. This is a great speed to absorb while you work. Almost like Gary is wandering around the office. Thank you so much for that kind review. And to anybody else listening out there, if you leave us a review, you might just get shouted out in the next episode.